Puncher.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another special interview episode from MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I am your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. However, today, I'm also your host and webmaster from FoodWorldOrder.com. And it's October 13th, 2010, and we are lucky enough to have on the line from also right here in Oregon, where I'm in Portland. She's down in Southern Oregon near Klamath Falls. Barbara Peterson of FarmWars.info. Thanks so much.
Hi. Well, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Absolutely. And it's something that I guess when it began, it wasn't intentional. But once I realized I was starting to meet other folks who were doing, you know, alternative media, websites, podcasts, radio shows, activism, I started to talk and meet more folks that are here in Oregon. There's a guy named Douglas Lane who runs the Diet Soap podcast and has done a lot of activism work for, I think, what we're going to talk about here, that it's all about making these connections. So, folks, if you have never heard of FarmWars.info, you should get online a tad more often. But, Barb, I'm just going to read from your own about just to kind of give folks a quick kind of intro, and then you can fill in the spaces there. But you're retired from the California Department of Corrections, and you worked at the one and only Folsom Prison. And you got a business degree. However, what you really realized you wanted to do was write and be an activist. And now you're living in a small ranch in Oregon, where as my city seemingly gets louder and crazier by the day, I kind of wish I was there with you right now.
Well, it is pretty peaceful out here, except there are a few extra cows over there on the other side of the road, and they do sometimes kick up a ruckus in the morning.
So I guess just with that kind of little brief thumbnail sketch, if you can just kind of tell folks, you know, how you became, you know, an online activist here, as we're all trying to do online using these new tools, essentially while we have them, to get together and spread information and get together.
Well, you know, once you realize that just about everything you've been told your entire life is a lie, then you get angry. I got angry. It's just seems to be that anytime you turn on a television or anything like that, listen to the news, what used to go in one ear and kind of rattle around in there and go, oh, okay, and then let out the other side while I was busy in my little, you know, I didn't have time to really think. I didn't have time to analyze things too much. So I just took what I got and then just went with it. But, you know, since I moved here, it's, you know, really nice. I've gotten online. I got an online degree and in business, and which was a real eye-opener. And I just realized that I need to do some writing, and I need to get what I'm learning out there. Because one thing that I did learn very well in college was how to do online research. And once I looked at 9/11 and those buildings collapse, and people are actually looking at that and believing the lie that it wasn't a controlled demolition, excuse me, I can tell you that the sky is pink until I'm blue in the face. Are you going to believe it? But if the president says the sky is pink, then you're going to believe it. That doesn't make any sense at all. It's called critical thinking, which our school system is basically not teaching us. They don't want us to know critical thinking. They don't want us to think beyond, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, whatever you want, Mr. Authority Figure, I will fall in line and do it, and I'll believe it. No, we have to think for ourselves. Every last person has to think for themselves. And if whatever you can do, whether it's to go online and put up a site, get information out there, just talk to people in grocery stores. You know, I've done that.
I was in the store that I usually shop, and I saw this guy in the oatmeal aisle, and I just started telling him, hey, look, you know, you see this oatmeal? This is, doesn't have any pesticides. The company is a good company. And if you buy even more, like a 50-pound bag, then you're going to realize a savings. And he's like, oh, okay, didn't realize that. Because he was just going to go in, get the small container, you know, full of pesticides and all that, and just go on about his business. And so I think that it's mainly a lot of us, you know, think that we can't do anything. You know, I'm not a big name or whatever, then I can't do anything. But each and every single one of us, the more we know, the more we can share it with other people. And the more we do that, then we can make a difference. And we're not helpless. Because the more awareness we can raise, the better off everybody's going to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, I find, I work at a grocery store here in Portland, Oregon, and it is a great way to talk to folks. And that has been the amazing change, I think, through the years that, you know, it is interesting because you brought up yourself, you know, it's the events of 9/11 that pretty much activated this whole basic, you know, kind of generation of new, you know, web-enabled, you know, activism and reach. But, you know, it's folks aren't really in the store talking about, you know, 9/11. They're talking about what's going on with their food and with our health. It's the main kind of unifying thing that I think people realize on a much larger level, that's an area we can make decisions. We can choose what we put down our gullet.
You know, if they get their way, and when I say they, I mean the mega corporations, mm-hmm. Including the USDA, our government is a corporation, and the Monsanto, and all of the people that stand to basically make a buck off of our illness and demise, then these people, you know, are trying to make it so that we have nothing but what Monsanto feeds us in our grocery stores. We have nothing but genetically modified garbage that has been independently tested and found to be harmful. And they're going, oh, no, no, it's okay. You know, more PR spin. Yeah, well, believe us. Don't believe them. They don't really know what they're talking about. Believe us. We're making money off of it, so you should definitely believe us. We bought and paid for our scientists. Yeah, believe us. Don't believe somebody who doesn't have anything to gain by it, which, yeah, okay, doesn't make any sense at all if you think about it. But most people don't. They'll just go into a McDonald's and go grab their hamburger, and they'll go in and buy their boxed cereal, which contains mostly genetically modified ingredients, and then wonder why, maybe in a week, 7 days, 8 days, or whatever, they have to go into the doctors because they've got some sort of a weird allergy or some sort of a skin rash that they don't know where it came from. And the doctor goes, oh, well, yeah, maybe we'll treat that with antibiotics or whatever. And they really don't know what's wrong. And a lot of it has got to do with the food we eat. I mean, when you say we are what we eat, we are. Specifically, we are. If we're going to eat something that has been blasted with a foreign gene. A fish gene has no place in corn. And if you believe that you can do something like that and it not have supposedly unintended consequences, then that's literally foolish.
Well,
and that's being kind.
It seems like that those are the things that we never get at the root kind of cause of any of these ills. The industry and the elites and the structure are all set around to basically benefit from the treatment of these things, that whole cause and effect situation that, again, pretty much only benefits them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing is, you know, they benefit because they're making money. Now, people ask, well, they eat that stuff too. No, they don't. They don't eat that stuff. They have enough money to go in and buy the good stuff. Okay, and why do you think they have that Svalbard seed bank out there? They're hoarding the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They know what's good. They know what's bad. We're getting the bad stuff.
And again, just I think as the food story relates to all the other levels that they, you know, again, they sort of buy up and store up and hide away the real, and they give us the fake copy simulation poison.
Yeah, and if you think about it, the eugenics movement has gone back, you know, quite a ways, but it's just morphed into Planned Parenthood, and which is supposedly a good thing, but it's eugenics, same people, same players, same thing. And if you think about it, if they can experiment on us, then, hey, why not? They collect all the data, figure out, hey, what works, what doesn't. Hey, people with their toys.
Well, and just as was admitted last week after 60-plus years, that the did you see about the Guatemalan syphilis experiment, quote-unquote?
Yes, I did. Uh-huh.
And it just, you know, those are the things that ultimately, it may be decades and decades later, but it comes out and they kind of discreetly say, oh, yeah, gee, gosh, we're sorry about that.
Oops.
Oops, yeah, and that's the thing, too. They'll try and play it and say, oops, we didn't really mean to do this. But a lot of times it's, oops, we're sorry we got caught and we're sorry you're so mad about it. But it never seems like the history books get updated to reflect these new things. Well, you know, when it comes out, have they updated the school books to say, well, pretty much that guy we blamed for burning down the Reichstag, yeah, he didn't really do it and we've exonerated him. But the history books are still going to say, you know, the communists burnt down the Reichstag, and it'll give a nod and a wink. But these stories, while they seem to be, you know, they become factual, the official story still wins. I guess that's because it's written by the winners.
It's propaganda. And that's all our history books now are, is propaganda. It's all the schools dish out is propaganda. Government-sponsored propaganda, what they want you to know. Everything we've been told is, you know, should be subject to scrutiny. We should not buy everything wholesale. Now, when I was a kid, I remembered I looked at the television, you know, and I don't want to date myself, but it was black and white. And anyway, and I said, oh, man, look at that. You know, look at that girl in that commercial. You know, wow, man, you know, she's so pretty. Maybe I should do that. And, you know, I was told, my parents said, look, you know, don't, you know, I'm sorry, but that's not right. Don't believe that. It's okay. You know, well, isn't that true? Well, no. Well, I didn't think they're supposed to lie to us. They lie to us every day. It was initiated as a propaganda technique just to get us subservient.
Well, and you...
And that's what it is.
That's absolutely what it is. You say it's propaganda. Well, the guy that, you know, that wrote the book on it, you know, was Bernays, and it was a nephew of Freud. And you did mention, fortunately, eugenics earlier. That it seems to me, and we'll throw in another topic, that I guess I was being a little too optimistic. I would have liked to have thought that the Obama change would become so, you know, apparent as for the fraud that it was to people. But it seemingly hasn't, and again, here in the sort of liberal stronghold of Portland. But when you see things like, yet again, Obama adding another basically food industry monster to another USDA post. The latest that I'm referring to is Catherine Wotecki. She comes from Mars, and now she'll be overseeing, you know, and it's all connected back to, we've got Michael Taylor from Monsanto. That you can't believe that this would be, oh, that's an accident. He didn't know that he was appointing the very people who were going to subvert all of these posts. So what will it take, I guess, for people to finally kind of go, oh, this is a fraud?
You know, I don't know. You know, I don't know. Everybody's in such denial. An interesting point about this this person from Mars. But are you aware that cocoa in Africa, in, I believe it's Ghana, they produce 70% of the world's cocoa, and Mars has been instrumental in unlocking the cocoa genome, which means they can start genetically modifying the cocoa now.
and patenting it, I guess.
Well, it's actually open at this point. And this is an interesting thing, because normally they'd go in and they'd patent it, and that would be the end of everything. But this one they have put in the public database, which is really interesting. And there's Mars in on it and IBM.
Oh, Jesus.
And they're targeting Africa. So this tells me that other than the money, there is definitely another motive for getting genetically modified foods out there and, you know, flooding everybody. Now, on my chocolate now, they're messing with my chocolate. But they want to have Africa is a big target for some reason for genetically modified foods. They're really trying to get in there. And with this cocoa, I believe that's exactly what they're going to do and say, oh, well, look, we put it on the public domain so you can have the genome sequence and have a free-for-all. Just start genetically modifying that cocoa. They're just going to spread it all over the place. And I'm sorry, but I don't think it's a coincidence that Africa is being targeted if you take a look at the history of the eugenics movement.
It's a test run.
Mm-hmm.
And geez, no. I mean, as soon as again, perhaps being too optimistic, but I'd like to think that we could get to a point where when you say IBM to people that they instantly think, oh, they helped make the Holocaust happen so efficiently.
Yeah, the little tattooed numbers, that was IBM, the accounting machines. In fact, don't look too closely or you'll see our census. Yeah, these people are, and they're all connected. If you go back far enough, I wrote an article about I got a bug about fluoride because that's just a straight up poison. So I just started tracing back and realized that this came straight out of IG Farben in Auschwitz. So if you take the fluoridating the prisoners so that they would be compliant, and I guess to do a little bit of experimental work on them, and other than the fact, you know, give them poison in their water and starve them, I guess you're going to have a pretty compliant, you know, not too feisty prison population. And so that worked so well for them, then we've got the companies that split off, because IG Farben then was known as, Bayer and Adventis and
BASF.
Mm-hmm. And then if you keep on digging in that area, you will find out that they're all now under the banner of crop science.
The Bayer crop science arm. I was going to say, I had already pulled this article. I had this article up as something that I wanted to discuss in this interview. So even as you started to mention it, I was like, yeah, that's the one I kind of wanted to touch on. For folks, we'll include the link to your article, The Codex Fluoride Auschwitz Monsanto Connection. And this guy, you know, that's the thing I think with a lot of these things that people want to brush it off and say, that's crazy conspiracy theory. But in a lot of these cases, and I think a lot of the good, honest work being done by any kind of amateur, independent, you know, researcher, these people, their names and addresses. And Fritz Termeer, this guy, which, you know, as what we were talking about, IG Farben and fluoride and the testing. So then trace that to what you were talking about, Bayer crop science.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's the thing is, when I do my research, I go back to original documents. I will go to the United Nations website. I will go to World Trade Organization website, the USDA website. This is all in their own documents. Okay? And as far as the connection to food, what's happening with Codex, the names involved, I.G. Farben. Come on, Fritz Demir was part of the main developer of Codex Alimentarius.
So actually, I find that Codex Alimentarius is something that maybe a lot of folks aren't familiar with. Can you kind of give a brief sketch of that?
Well, number one, it's the UN's baby. It was created by the Food and Agriculture Organization, the FAO, and the World Health Organization. Okay? So this was created in around 1963, and it's supposed to develop food standards, guidelines, and I'm reading this part right now, and related texts such as codes of practice under the joint FAO-WHO Food Standards Program. And they're supposed to be, supposedly, protecting our health. And this is the kicker, ensuring fair trade. Okay? So, what Codex is tasked with doing, and if you consider the roots of it, going back to one of the architects of Auschwitz, this is supposed to be making it easier to trade. In other words, you have the United States, and say we have a high food standard, let's say we do, and then you have another country that can't afford the higher food standard, or simply doesn't do it. Let's just put China in the mix there. Okay. So now what you have is, you have a standard that the high one is going to have to come down because the low one can't make it up to where you are. That's how they leveled. That's called harmonization, and you'll find that in Codex all the time. Harmonization. That's what they mean.
In their euphemistic language.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They're getting everybody on a level playing field. Now, that means you have to take melamine-tainted food from China. If you don't, then you're creating a barrier to free trade. And your country can be legally prosecuted under Codex guidelines, United Nations, because being a signatory to GATT, which was a precursor to the United Nations, then signing on to the United Nations and the World Trade Organization, that means that we have been placed in a position of being obligated to implement whatever they tell us to. We've basically given up our sovereignty, and people say, no, we still have our sovereignty. No, what you have is an illusion of sovereignty because these traitors have sold us out to the United Nations for a buck.
And they'll get to get rid of a lot of useless eaters in the process. As we again say, a lot of this traces back to the eugenics operations. And so, it's like when you see essentially the Nazis performing Holocaust, of course, with the help from the multinational, other, sort of multi-generational serial killers. But when you see, and they pulled their eugenics ops, but they just learned it from the West. They, wrote letters and gave awards to Margaret Sanger, who's, noted as the founder of Planned Parenthood. One of the early board members was Microsoft's Bill Gates' father. Bill Gates, now one of the largest, benefactors to the seed vault in Norway. And, of course, he wants to make those flying syringes, mosquitoes filled with vaccines for people. And all of these things, again, seem to trace back to, what it is. It's the same group of sort of self-styled elites.
And I think that they're, it's a psychopathic personality. And whereas nothing matters but them, you are nothing to them. And they're actually trained that way from birth, I believe, You know, I can't prove that, but
well, they don't go to schools like we do, and they don't, you know, sort of live amongst the mob as we all do.
The great unwashed.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, they are in a completely different area, and to want the world themselves, and to reduce us down to, like the Georgia Guidestones say, 500 million people. Hey, that's manageable. You can have your herd reduced down to that, and then they won't mess up the places that you like to look at. They won't dirty the water, and they won't smell so bad.
It really seems as though, you know, as time goes by and this all seems to ratchet up and speed up, that the Aldous Huxley Brave New World scenario kind of seems the far more plausible. Of course, after a massive eugenics sort of in-game die-off, then they can move into the sort of shiny, happy techno-fascism where everyone's happy to have their place. I'm a beta and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and have you heard of this transhumanism thing?
Ah, a little.
Yeah. I haven't researched it a whole lot, but it seems that they, you know, it's almost like a Borg type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to get this, and I'm going to get that, and I'm going to be a better, you know, person. Well, let's transplant a brain cell here.
Yeah, I wonder what the long-term, you know, ramifications of that would be, as opposed to let's put a spider and a goat together and see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, the method that we're going to use to do it is we're just going to go ahead and coat this. Do you know how they do this genetic modification stuff? Do you know how
no,
what the process is?
No.
There's basically two processes. Okay. One process, which is not quite as popular as the other, is they take what's called a gene gun and they coat a little particle with gold, okay, to penetrate the cell and inject the gene. Well, when you shoot something in an organism, it's not exactly precise. There's a lot of collateral damage there, okay? So expecting it, everything to heal up just perfectly and everything to be the same is ridiculous. That isn't even logical. That doesn't even make sense. But yet, that's what they do. And they say, well, it's okay because we said it is okay. And the second way they do it is through what's called an agrobacterium. This is the two most popular ways, I believe. The agrobacterium being the most popular, and that's a little thing that causes crown gall disease on plants, because what it does is horizontally transfer genetic material. By horizontal or lateral transfer, I mean it sort of takes something from one thing and then transfers it into something else, as opposed to being bred for traits. And you cross two things, and then they'll breed and have a, you know, hybrid, whatever. This is forcing through infection to get that gene in there. So the agrobacterium goes in and infects the cell, transfers the gene through a virus. And that virus goes in there and makes sure that that gene keeps on a running.
Hmm.
Now, that's the food we're eating. It's been infected by an agrobacterium and activated by a virus.
And meanwhile, we can't grow hemp because it's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't grow hemp. Oh, no, that's bad. But eat this garbage that actually has been shown to stay in your gut and can be transferred to the bacteria in your gut. You could have a little pesticide factory running around in your gut.
Mm.
And it comes out, you know, in your waste products and materials and all that. And it's this is what they're doing to us. And once you kind of grasp the full impact of that, how they're actually changing our DNA, mm-hmm. and they're doing it on a whim. They're doing it because they can make money off of doing it, and we will eat whatever's put in front of our faces without asking too many questions.
Mm-hmm. That's,
and that's how they get away with it.
And it may seem that, and I was just kind of thinking this as we're talking, that maybe this escalation really, because it seems that they're really kind of moving fast with a lot of these food issues, because it seems like people, because a lot of people are waking up and becoming concerned about it, they're now making their move to say, oh man, we're about to lose control of this. These people are starting to take back, you know, their own food powers. So we need to run new PR campaigns, and high fructose corn syrup is now called, what is it, corn sugar, that they rebranded it mm-hmm. to recently, and these sort of mm-hmm. PR pushes, because they've been losing this battle. As far as it goes for, you know, for the hearts and minds, because people have kind of turned on to what's been going on, at least on some level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe there is a lot of people waking up. There's got to be a lot more waking up. There's got to be a lot more, because when I go into the grocery store, that's my measuring stick, and I look at people's shopping carts, and I see what they're buying. I see what they're eating. And then you see it reflected in the people. You got somebody that's got, I'd say 90% of their shopping cart filled with processed food, and you see obese people. You see people with diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
You see them with, you know, all sorts of, you know, nasty little diseases, and it's all because of the food that we're eating. And it's not an accident. It's planned. They've got our food. They've got our water by fluoride in the water. You know, Oregon was good. You know, I believe they're somewhere around only 20% fluoridated. But just a little while back, they tried to get something through to get that water fluoridated so that there would be something like 88% fluoridated. But that did not pass, which is a very, very good thing. But when you take control of the food and the water, and you do it, you know, basically by lies, control, manipulation, and stealth, and you've got them. You've got the people. And mm-hmm. unless people start waking up and individually start taking a stand and saying, no, I'm not going to drink this. I am not going to eat this. I'm going to go down and see if there's a guy in a local place that maybe grows veggies in his backyard that, you know, I can trade in my tomatoes for his onions.
Mm-hmm. So that's actually, and I was going to say that, you know, as we kind of touched on the Codex Fluoride Auschwitz article, that, you know, there is so much available on farmwars.info, but I think where we should kind of turn at this point is to start to talk about, you know, again, what we really can do. And I think, like I said, we may hopefully be uniquely positioned here in the Pacific Northwest to be able to start to make this change before we have no choice and everybody's starting from scratch when it hits the fan.
It's a learning curve, and that's what a lot of people, I think, don't understand. If you want to start learning how to grow your own food, do it now. Don't wait until there's no food, because you're not going to know what to do. You know, oh, well, just put a seed in the ground and water it and it'll grow. There's a lot more to it than that. You have to know the composition of your soil. You have to know what's going to grow well next to other things. My second year, I decided I was going to grow potatoes. Well, little did I know that if you grow potatoes within 50 feet of the rest of your crops, the potatoes take all of the nourishment out of the soil and the rest of your crops are stunted.
Huh.
Yeah, interesting lesson. So,
and probably just one thing out of a ton of things to learn like that.
Right. So you got to start, you know, you really got to start. You got to start learning, and you just got to start doing it and practicing. And even if you're in a city, okay, I've got cucumbers and tomatoes in my house that they're growing because I've only got a 37-day grow cycle here. We freezes all the time.
Mm.
So that you really can't. Root crops do good. You got to know what in your area what does good. Otherwise, learn how to put up a greenhouse. But I've got two tomato plants growing in my window. I've got cucumbers and peppers growing in my other window. And you can do all sorts of little misty wall things just to get some food going. You might not be able to grow all of your own food in an apartment, but maybe the next guy down the way, he's got something, you know, and you can start doing some trading and find a farmer or something that's, you know, willing to, you go to the place, you know, maybe you can pick apples or maybe you can pick pears or whatever that you want and start getting back to real food. I know a farmer in Wisconsin, Paul, and he has people come over when he's got his chicken. If you're a vegetarian, this will be gross. But he prepares his chickens, right? And everybody, if you want to get your supply of chicken for the year, then you go there and you help with all the work. You help him out and you labor, and it's a community thing, and you just prepare all the chickens, and then you go home with your share of chicken. Easy.
And the, you know, and those are things, again, that if we, you know, if you found yourself in some kind of situation like you've never killed a chicken before and how to fix it, essentially, you know, these are, you know, the questions that we're talking about that, again, it's, you don't really want to be meeting your neighbors for the first time when suddenly nothing works anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'll tell you, I don't like, you know, killing chickens or geese or anything like that. But if I'm starving, you know, the geese are kind of my pets, and I have, you know, killed a few chickens. But if I'm starving and I don't know how to do that, you know, I'm going to mess it up. I'm going to lose the chicken, lose the meal. And, you know, since I not know what I'm doing, you have to know. You have to. The knowledge is so valuable. That it, and how to can, how to dry things, and it's simple things that people don't know how to do. That we really need to get to the point where we have these skills and then can share them and teach others. That's the only way we're going to. The way I see. That we're going to be able to survive this in any type of healthy situation at all.
Because I think sometimes we, you know, can in the, you know, in the alternative media, and of course people just want to call us crazy conspiracy theorists, but some, you know, there are some that do have the tendency to think that, you know, we're going to wake up tomorrow and it's going to be martial law. It kind of seems in a way that it would... I kind of think, as long as we've kind of mentioned, you know, test runs of things, that something like Katrina, in a way, was, I think, unfortunately, something that we could see, and that the people who claim to be there for you to protect and serve, when it really goes down, they're going to leave and go take care of their families. It's going to come down to we're basically going to be on our own. So that's it. We're going to have to know these things.
Yeah. Yeah, they, you know, they want us to just go quietly into that good night. You got the wrong person here because I am not going to do that. And people need to start standing up on their hind legs and say, I'm not going to take it. I'm, you know, going to fend for myself and know how to do it. Because if you want to be ushered into one of those little places, like little FEMA camps that they've got popping up all over the place, just look at Katrina. Look what happened to those people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was horrendous. People were dying. They weren't getting food. They weren't getting anything. And people were having their guns taken away from them so they couldn't protect themselves. And that's what they have planned.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was a test run. And we all got to watch it, you know, on TV. We all got to watch it like a, you know, crazy
reality
show round the clock.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
geez.
Wait till it's your turn.
Well, and that's the thing that disturbs me about this sort of decriminalization in Multnomah County. That, you know, like I said, it's like, okay, possession of drugs is one thing, but hit and runs and trespassing, and it almost just seems to say, yeah, well, you know, we throw up our hands and we give up.
Well, I'll tell you, I live out here in a place where it's kind of remote. And there is a rumor going around. I don't know how true it is. But up on the hill that somebody made a phone call to the sheriff and said, somebody's been shot up here. And the sheriff said, is he dead? And they said, yes. So they didn't come out for 2 more days.
Huh.
So that's kind of the reputation that that place out here has. The sheriff will come around and they'll say, you know, you armed? Yeah.
That's the intro
gonna,
question.
Yeah, they aren't going to be able to get out here. Okay, they're an hour drive. So if something is going to happen, that's not going to wait for them to get here an hour later. It's going to happen. So you have to be prepared to take care of yourself. And, because depending on somebody else is not it, because when it all boils down to it, you know, like you said, it's one-on-one. It's you needing to do something because somebody isn't going to come in to the rescue.
And again, if we can head this off at the pass, we're all going to be, I think, in a lot better situation. There's something, as again, I find my eyes kind of looking at some of the other things that you have on farmwars.info. The NAIS and the National Animal Identification System.
Mm-hmm.
What's the state of that at this point? Is that an area where perhaps we've kind of pushed back and won?
Nope. Not really. It's being implemented by stealth. Wisconsin, I believe, is one of the main states that it's just really. The battle is going on hot and heavy there with that. They're coming on and telling farmers, you have to do this. You have to have the national animal identification system in place, even though the feds have said, oh, well, you know, maybe not. They're still pushing it in Wisconsin. So if they couldn't get it done basically on a federal level, they're getting the states to continue with it. So if you don't win one way, then you come in from another angle to do it. And recently I was told, you know, that if I brought my horses there, that I would have to get a premises ID and NAIS tag. And I said, yeah, in a pig's eye, I'm not doing that. There is no way I'm doing that. Because it's just another form of control, which they have no business being that much in control. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to submit. And more people have to just say, look, I'm not going to do it. I believe the Amish case there, which was the first one that was brought to my attention where they were being sued for noncompliance, they won on religious grounds. But there's more suits. They're just continuing to sue each and every farmer. And I believe that this is, if you look at the larger picture, what they're doing is it's an entire push against the small guy, the little guy, so the multinationals can take over. Because in the NAIS program, the multinationals basically can get away with maybe having one number for a whole slew of animals. But the little guy has to have a number for each one because he hasn't reached that threshold of having, you know, a certain amount of animals. So it becomes so laborious for him and so non-cost effective that he's just going to go under. And then we see the raw milk push thing.
Uh-huh.
And that's connected, too, because we had Rawsome Foods in Venice. Guns drawn, they go in, they grab the raw milk. You guys are criminals. You know, you got raw milk. And then that snowballed into an Ozark place where they came in and told them to get rid of all of their, and they're doing a wonderful, you know, never had one single complaint, not one illness. They do raw milk, raw cheese. And they have been told by the authorities that they need to destroy 50,000 pounds of their raw cheese. That will destroy this small company. It will take them out, totally out of business. They do that, and it's like committing suicide. So the push is on by having these horrible regulations that the huge multinationals can just say, oh, okay, this isn't even a pimple on my back, and just comply, make it very easy for them, and make it so onerous for the little guy that the little guy's wiped out. So now, again, you have the multinationals gaining control of our food supply through things like NAIS. And it's all pushing towards the same thing, total food control.
And the revolving door gets them from, as we just said, Mars or Monsanto into the USDA and FDA.
Yes. Well, it's corporations working with each other. You look it up in Dun & Bradstreet, you know, the United States government is a corporation. It's in Dun & Bradstreet. Hello, USDA, it's a corporation. It's in Dun & Bradstreet. So to have the CEO for Monsanto then become whatever is equivalent to a CEO in the USDA is not a far reach, because it's corporations doing business. And when I got my business degree, one of the main things I learned was that a corporation has no conscience. You can be a philanthropic organization, corporation, by doing good things in order to advance your corporate agenda of the bottom line, of increasing the bottom line, but it's not necessary. So the corporation does not, when you hear the federal government likes you, it cares for you, it's going to take care of you, baloney. A corporation is not going to do that, because by the very structure and definition of a corporation, that isn't in the makeup. Caring is not the makeup of these mega corporations we have. It's just to make money. That's it. That's the only thing they exist for, is to make money. It either makes money or it doesn't. If you can make money by pretending to be, let's just throw in Bill Gates. You know, if you can be the biggest philanthropist in the world and pretend that you are so wonderful, come on, the Windows operating system, give me a break. It's demented. But if you can make money by pretending to be such a do-gooder, and then great. Now, if he had to do something else to make money, I'm sure he'd do that and lay off of the philanthropy, as long as it made him money. He can have every bit of money in the world that he wants, but it's not going to be enough, because he's still going to want more and more and more and more and more and more. That's the nature of a corporation and the people that buy into that. What we've got to do is break that in our own lives. We have to get out of that. We have to say, I'm not going to deal with that like that with people. I'm going to deal on a one-on-one basis. I'll do something for you, you do something for me, and yes, I care if my product harms you.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's just you and me, and if it's just the neighborhood, and there's only five of us here, and if my neighbor sells me something that kills my child, you better believe I'm going to be right over there. But right now, these corporations, they have no accountability, so they can get away with just being this huge whale that's engulfing all these tiny little fish on its way to wherever it's going, and not even thinking twice about it. Personal accountability is going to become very, very real when you don't have anything to hide behind, when you're basically with like five neighbors and you.
Max Kaiser. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him or not, an economist and talk show host and activist. He's called for and has kind of given, you know, the rundown of how it would work, I believe, is something called a targeted boycott. That, as we were kind of talking about a lot of these, you know, horrible corporations, and it kind of reminded me how you'll see horrible corporations like Nike and others here in the city, you know, underwriting and sponsoring, you know, good artistic, lively art type of events. And to them, you know, it's just a pittance to be able to throw out some money for, oh, your little film festival. Yeah, here you go. Again, like you said, that's just a pimple on their back. But it buys them the cred of looking as though they care about you. But maybe this idea of a targeted boycott could become easier as time goes on. And if, you know, again, as Max Kaiser called it, the controlled demolition of the economy, if it continues apace, as it looks quite likely to do, it may become a hell of a lot easier for people to boycott Coke.
Yeah, and it seems also to deal with habits, too. I mean, people have habits, and they're very, very hard to break, extremely hard. If you've got a four Pepsi or four Coke a day habit, you're not going to go gently. You're going to not want to give that up.
You know, and that reminds me of this thing that's been going on around Glenn Beck and his illness and kind of being related to his massive Diet Coke intake and folks talking, you know, that this list brings up aspartame. But let's not get all into that. I think try and stay positive here as I think we will start to wrap it up here. But I would just say, you know, this was a great kind of introductory talk. And again, you and I didn't really have a whole lot of, you know, pre-show, you know, planning of how this would go. And I think it goes best as kind of a looser conversation. But maybe just some closing words for folks and also ways that they can get in touch with you, the work, you know, the shows and other media that you do.
Well, farmwars.info, that's my site, and my partner in crime is Marty Oakley, and she's got the PPJ Gazette, and you can just Google that and find her site. And we're doing, on Blog Talk Radio, we're doing the Truth Squad Radio, and we get people on, and it's kind of more of a view-type format, because we get together and we just start talking, and then people call in, and we might have, you know, five people on the line at the same time, and we just have a good conversation. So it's mainly trying to work out some sort of a personal solutions to what we're all going to be facing, and we're each facing things differently. We've each got different levels. Like the person that just lost his job is facing, you know, the New World Order takeover a lot more personally than a person who's cocooned and doesn't see it because they've got plenty of money and they've got their home and they've got everything and it just hasn't hit them yet. So preparation, a lot of times we think, well, yeah, I'll just wing it, I'll just go do it. But preparation is what we need. We need to understand that food is important, water is important. We need to, and relationships are important. So that's the way I see it. If things are going the way I think they're going, we're going to have to learn how to depend on maybe a certain few people that we know we can count on, get some skills growing food, drying food, cooking. You might grow all the corn and beets in the world, but if you don't know how to cook it, prepare it so that somebody wants to eat it, it gets pretty bad. People get pretty cranky. So, yeah, those are the things we're just trying to get the word out. And, you know, people like you, and I love your site, that Food World Order. That's really a neat site. I really like it.
And
then just start sharing and linking and use the web while we can. Because by the time that goes down, if we don't have as much information collected as possible, then we're going to be winging it, and that's not going to be good.
Yeah, so there are so many angles that, again, it seems mind-boggling or so insurmountable that how do I do any of this? But that, again, it comes down to teamwork.
Yeah, and one step at a time. Okay, how do you learn anything? I've done 100-mile rides. I'm an endurance rider. I've done the Tevis. I've done the Nevada City 100. And when you look at it, you think, I've got to do 100 miles in one day on a horse. Okay, oh, boy, that's pretty intimidating, but the way you start out doing that is one step at a time. You get your horse, and then you start your workout routine. you don't do a Boston Marathon the first day. You do your training. You work up to it. You know, you start, like with the horses, I start going, you know, a couple miles a day, work up to the 5 miles a day, then I'm, you know, 10 miles, work out a routine, figure out what's going to work, how many days per week I'm going to work, what's best for the horse. And then pretty soon, I do 100 miles in a day and I don't even think twice. But if you get on a horse and decide you've never ridden more than 5 miles in a day, and you decide, and I've seen people do this, that they're going to ride that horse for a 100-mile ride, and then you find them a third of the way on the ride, if they make it that far, off on the side of the road, their horse is lame and they're, you know, gasping for breath because they didn't prepare.
Mm-hmm.
Preparation.
Both, yeah, physically, mentally, spiritually, all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Barbara Peterson of farmwars.info, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, had a good time. Glad to be here.
And hopefully on all of these things we've talked about, hopefully this, you know, can be the beginning of something that'll spread out and resonate and reverberate.
I think so. You know, I wouldn't be working so hard if I didn't think that.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks so much.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
This world is big and wild and half insane. Take me where real animals are tame. Just a dirty old check with a hand of bark that we called our home. I wanna be back there. She's far from home. She is free from harm. Does she need not fear? She is by my side. And the sky is wide. So let the sun shine.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, the New World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.